Welcome to Tommy Blue View, your source for all things Everton. All right? I'm Jerry. We have David and Max here. All right? David's back from his vacation to Antarctica. Wonderful. The penguins this time of year, I hear, David.
I'm a busy guy.
Everywhere. Guys, this weekend was bad. That's the quick, easy way to sum it up. Were any of you unfortunate enough to have to go to Wembley?
No, I didn't go.
Thank God.
Isn't that funny the way I worded that? Because it's like this big, like, amazing stadium. And me, being from America, I would love to watch something there. But I'm sitting there thinking, God, that would have gutted me. It literally would have ripped out my insides. Ah, terrible.
Yeah, the problem is with Wembley, we still haven't won there. I know we beat United on penalties, but we've been there about four or five times and haven't won once. So
yeah,
it's not ideal when that's the place you go to win trophies, but there you go.
For all you podcasters out there, this is what's happening on this episode of Toffee Blue View. We have to react to Spurs because it happened and it was shit, and it's just we have to say something about it. Next, we have to address the fact that we made a video about Klaassen fighting for his place, and then immediately, 2 hours later, Big Sam came out and said, you know, I think I'm okay with him leaving, him and Sandra. So, there's that. Theo Walcott is inches away from entering the fray, walking in, becoming a Blue. All my friends who don't know football are really excited about this because they love IT Crowd. There's an episode where they talk about being men and liking football. And what was Winger thinking bringing Walcott on that early? All my friends who do not know football know that line. And they're like, wow, you're getting Walcott? I'm like, yes, IT Crowd, I get it. Anyway, and lastly, we have a Remember Me segment. This guy just recently left England to play. He got cut. Released and is now playing for a club in his homeland of South Africa, Steven Pienaar. Remember that guy? Remember when we had a silky, skilled player combined with other players? Oh my God. So, that's it. That's our plug-o-rama for the rest of the show. Gents, we need to try to do our best to kind of make this one painless. We're not going to react to Spurs in the traditional way. We're not going to talk about what went wrong necessarily. I've heard everybody bitching about Cuco Martina. We get it. He's a right back, a subpar right back, playing left back. Everybody knows he's not our first choice. Everybody knows he's a problem. You don't have to be a brain surgeon to figure that out. So instead, let's figure out what needs to change. Let's be productive with this time. Right? Mm-hmm. Which one of you lovely chaps would like to start?
I don't mind, David. You can take it from me if you want.
Enjoy.
Welcome. I'll try and keep it short, but I think if we can play him, we just got to bring Garvin into that left back position just to have a natural left back. I'm just thinking about stuff that's realistic that can be done as in the next game. We're not talking about who we can bring in, just what we can do straight away. Garvin left back, I think, has got to come in. And we've got to shoot more. It sounds common sense, but we've just got to start getting in and around the box and just shooting. Even if they go well over the bar or straight into the keeper's arms, we've got to start creating more goal scoring opportunities. So I'm not going to dwell on Saturday. It was probably one of the worst results in a long time. So yeah, we've got to start shooting more. It's as simple as that. I think if we sort out that left back position, get a natural left back there, I think straight away that'll add more balance to the defence, add more balance going forward as well. It's so hard for me personally. I come away from Saturday struggling to think what more I could change because I think too many players are just letting us down. So I think everyone needs to up the game.
Yeah, I think as you say, we need to find like actual solutions that we can't be just carry on, see what happens in this January window. You know, that doesn't solve the problems of coming up against West Brom, does it? So, yeah. What I took away from that Tottenham game was granted, it was Tosin's first game, but and it just doesn't just go for him, it goes for everyone, such as Guilfi, Rooney, and whoever's playing in a more attacking role in the team. I think we need to start pressing more from the front. We need to start defending from the front, because particularly in that Spurs game, I mean, I know we had the odd, they tried to combine and ultimately it came to nothing. But we just seem to be bypassed fairly easy. And granted, Spurs are a team that they work very much as a unit. You know, the defence in sync with the midfield, and the midfield kind of linking with the attack. And, you know, they all kind of move forward as a well-organised and pragmatic team. So, you know, granted, we did come up against good opposition, but I do feel like, particularly against West Brom, and, you know, we've got a relatively easy run of games coming up. I think to start, I think we need to start just pressing more from the front. I mean, we've seen from Liverpool against Manchester City what that can bring. I mean, I know Liverpool, compared to us, they've got a higher calibre of attacking players, but I think that it proves it in the pudding there, really. If you press, starting from whoever's starting up front and whoever's behind him, and the wingers press on as well, they all need to put a defensive shift in, because ultimately that leads to, you know, like I was saying about Gay. Yeah, Gay was doing a lot of running around, but what he does need to do, he needs to win the ball. You know, he can't just harry it out into a more disadvantaged position for Spurs. You know, we need to start winning that ball further up the field, because this links into David's point. What's that going to lead to? Shots. And I mean, we've had 4 shots on target in the last 5 Premier League games. That is absolutely atrocious. So I think we need to look at realistic solutions and pressing from the front and trying to win that ball in the opposition's half or near the opposition's box. Plus, I do think a formation rethink needs to happen. But I think that's just the more immediate solution that we should try and change.
It's always nice going last, because I've got 2 smart guys who speak before me. So I'm always just sort of like, well, shit.
No, you know, when you've just had all this shit boiling in your mind, and, you know, I listen to other podcasts and videos and other people's reactions. Obviously, like as Jerry said, you know, you get Cuco Martina getting all this shit saying, oh, where was he? He wasn't even on the pitch. He was that far out of position. And, you know, that's the club's fault, if any. You know, you look at some of the left-backs that we could have. I do think that, you know, cover all you like, but we do need to find someone at left-back that can slot in, because Baines isn't getting any younger. And, mm-hmm. You know, I think a transfer that I've been watching, well, a player that I've been watching, thinking, why didn't we get him years ago? Ricardo Rodriguez, who's gone from Wolfsburg to AC Milan.
He was so good.
He scored a fucking great free kick against us in Europe. I digress.
No, you're fine. I was saying it just because you guys covered so many like very valid points. Definitely don't feel bad about getting everything out of your brain, Max. Because I've got to do it now, and I'm going to ramble. But basically, all right. I saw a lot of really poor defensive communication. Martina, yeah, he struggled. There was some moments where he struggled. Not the only one. Not the only defender to struggle. You know, I've seen people over this weekend after that game saying Jonjo Kinney is not up to it, period. Okay? After that game. Now, that's a player who was the Toffee Blues player of the month for December. Okay? And that was voted by supporters. Right? So after a game like that, everyone is suspect as far as defense, definitely. All right, especially that defensive collapse. Defensive communication was shit. I think a big part of it, I noticed our little unbeaten run when Sam took over, Mason Holgate, Ashley Williams, defensive pairing. Mm. I would like to go back to that. All right, no, Jags is an able person many times. He makes mistakes just like everybody else. I just don't know if his communication is as good as with Holgate, because Holgate and Williams are peeps. Do people say that anymore? They're friends. They hang out. Whatever. So I would go back to them, and I would throw Garbin in on the left. He may struggle defensively, but at least we're going to have somebody getting forward and putting in some beautiful curling balls. You know, that's going to happen. Leave Kinney in. He's fine. Who else
is
going to be?
He's 20 years old.
Yes.
He's 20 years old, having his first seen like a season due to Seamus Coleman being out. You know, it's his first season in the first team, and people call him for his head after that performance.
Yeah,
need to just, you know, double think there. Really,
it's just a problem with football fans in general. It's just a short term cycle. So within two bad game weeks, someone can be the worst player in the world, and then two good game weeks, they're fantastic again. So I think you just got to take what you see online, pinch of salt. So you'd always get these boring bastards. But yeah, it was interesting what you said, Max, about depression. I think that is probably one of the biggest things Everton need to learn to do. Sadly, it isn't an overnight thing, but we seem to hoof the ball up and get back into a defensive position rather than following the ball out. So naturally, all you're doing then is just inviting the pressure back onto yourself. Everyone needs to go out as a unit, and they're not doing it. And that's why we seem to be so defensive against every team. And when we were talking maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago about this one tactic fits all type thing, that's kind of what it is. That's why it feels like we're always the defensive team, because we're not pressing at all up the pitch.
And something that I think would actually help our pressing, all right, I'm having trouble with Rooney and Sigurdsson being on the field in the positions they're playing right now. Okay, the derby, FA Cup derby, all right? We got our goal, sadly, after Rooney subbed out. Sigurdsson shifts to the middle, and we have speed on the flanks, all right? We have speed on the flanks, and so all of a sudden, we're more dynamic, period. And I think it's a huge headache for a manager to have to choose between Gylfi Sigurdsson or Wayne Rooney. Now, what a lot of people have proposed, pull Rooney back to play a little closer to Gay.
More of a golden role. Rooney, he always seems to be flagged up after a big game. I think, as you say, in that derby, he got subbed off, and this Tottenham game, he really struggled. So, I mean, you see he scores hat-tricks against, you know, West Ham, gets the odd goal. But this comes into the very specific dilemma that I don't think Evertonians realised that we were going to be faced with. That is, you know, you can't overexpose Wayne Rooney, you know, at the age that he is. And I think we just need to accept it for what it is. Just bench him, you know. And as you say there, it's coming out of as a bit of a problem playing Sigurdsson and Rooney in the same team. And I don't know, as you say again, I don't know whether that means dropping him back closer to Gay. But if you want to, in the long term, have a tee, because I think, you know, Rooney's not going to be a long-term solution as a holding midfielder. So I feel, even easing Davies in, and I think me and David have said it multiple times, that we feel Davies does better when Everton are on the front foot and playing more attacking football. And as I alluded to earlier, I think it just needs a complete formation change. I just don't think this system works anymore for Everton.
Right now, I think what we're running is that 4-2-3-1, with the two either being Gay, Schneiderlin, or McCarthy, and then the three usually Wayne's in the middle, Siggy's on one side, Bolasie's on the other, and then Cenk Tosun or DCL up top, right? So, what are we thinking is a more advantageous formation for us moving forward?
Personally, I want to see us lean more towards a 4-3-3 with a more alternating front line. You know, I've got my team down for West Brom, and in my front three, I've got Luckman, Tosun, and Vlasic. So that energy and that again, it just comes back to me point of the high press, and I hate to say it, but it's almost like wishing for a carbon copy of what Liverpool produced. Really.
I had a feeling you were going there.
Yeah, because as I say, they are the current living proof that system and of pressing and heavy rotation of whoever chases down the ball. That you can get results from that, no matter who you're playing. as proved by the fact they've just been the first team to beat Manchester City this season. So, yeah, I'm leaning more towards a 4-3-3. And I'd have Sigurdsson. I know a lot of people are wanting to see Sigurdsson in that number 10 role. I'd put Sigurdsson just behind the three, really. And then, again, the two in the midfield. I think Gay seems to be the mainstay, really. I think Gay is kind of the first midfielder on everyone's team sheet whenever you ask anyone. So that, and I think that's something else that we need to try and uncover, is who is that other man going to be in the midfield to play with Gay? Because with McCarthy, and I say this reluctantly, he just seems so passive in that Spurs game. He seemed to be given a defensive role and he just seemed to be bypassed far too easy.
David, formation-wise, what would you plump for?
I'd eventually like to go to something that Max is talking about, but my only issue is with this current squad is I just think they just don't know the roles well enough, and they're always so unbalanced that I'd probably want to just maybe see a 4-4-1-1. So it's a bit more rigid, and we just have two out and out wingers. We have Gay with someone in the centre, Sigurdsson in the 10, and Tosin up front as a lone striker. Just because I just want to see some balance in the team for a little bit, you know, and everyone kind of knowing the jobs. Because I feel like when we're playing this 4-2-3-1 or variations of it, everybody from the defence upwards just looks completely lost. So I don't, as I said, I'd like to eventually go to what Max is talking about, because I don't think forward at this level. But I think for this current group that we're stuck with at the moment, I'd like to see a 4-4-1-1 and have a bit more balance across the squads and be just a bit more rigid. Mm-hmm. Everyone doing the job right. Have two wingers on the wings. I just don't like this formation that we've been playing all year.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing 4-4-1-1. Max, your formation, I agree. I actually thought it was something that would help us before Sam got here. You know, I thought with the parts that we had, I thought it fit well for our personnel. I don't know that Sam has ever really used a formation like that very much, you know, because he tends to be more of a defensive-minded guy. He's usually pretty flexible, but I've just never seen him run 4-3-3.
Oh, I know. What I'm worried about is, a comment that he made after the game, or the players didn't fancy attacking today, and something that I tweeted, I am very concerned, and just to kind of highlight that even more, something that just David said then, being stuck with this current group of players, that isn't a phrase that a fan should be saying after the team just spent so much in the summer on bringing in quality. So it's a real damning assessment of Everton at the moment. And I just, particularly with them comments made by Sam, is that, you know, we need to be more boring. The players didn't fancy attacking today. I just don't want this to become a players/fans versus the manager situation, which we've seen previously with Koeman, with Martinez. And, you know, I can kind of full circle this back to my first initial reaction to when Sam was appointed. I just didn't want this to happen. And it looked like it is happening now. And as I say, you know, a more easier run of fixtures coming our way. So hopefully we can see a bit of an experiment with the formation and the variations of the type of football that we play, rather than just the one-fits-all type of tactic. So, yeah, I'm worried. I can't really hide that.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing what you're talking about, Max. I don't know if he's going to do that. I think you could see him if he changes formation, which, let's be honest, I don't know if he's going to do that, but I mean, he has done it in the past. All right, the formation he's used the most has been a 4-1-4-1. Like, I went back past years and I saw the different kinds of formations he's done in the past. That wouldn't be the worst thing, as long as he's not running too right in front of the. You know what I mean?
That just screams isolation for whoever's playing up front, though, and that seems to be a huge problem with Everton. So, I mean,
I guess it depends on who actually goes with it. Like, if you've got one in front of the four, and then you have, if you can manage to have that space between the one and the four, and then the four pushes forward with the one, I think that would be the ideal. You know what I mean? Like, I would hope. But you're right. If we continue with the same tactics, the same thought process, the same approach, then the one is going to be isolated every time. You know, like every time. So I don't know, guys. I would if he could run a 4-4-1-4-1 properly, I'd be fine with that. 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1, 4-3-3. We're really saying everything except what we're running right now.
Mm-hmm.
Everything except for that. All right? Because guys, the reason we're holding back from some of these formations with one up top by itself is because Cenk Tosun was by himself on Saturday. And he was, I mean, Max and I were talking off camera, David. Cenk Tosun, I'd say that was my that was my favorite positive from Saturday's game. All right. I thought he held the ball up well. I think he's smart. He's strong. He wins the ball in the air. I like him.
So and that kind of got flagged to me, which is weird. I think I was watching an NBC's coverage of the game, and something that the commentator came out with was he emphasized it quite heavily, actually, that Cenk Tosun, he wasn't Allardyce's. Allardyce basically just isn't happy with the fact that Walsh has been so insistent and keen on in bringing him in. So it's almost as if, you know, Allardyce is having to use this man up front, when in reality, because something that I said as soon as he took him off, which I wouldn't have, by the way, I don't know why you'd substitute a player who's got so much promise on the debut, but and then he kind of just alternated for Calvert-Lewin, which of course I think we all know leads to more long balls, because, you know, we know Dominic likes winning his headers and things like that. But, you know, there's loads of things that just don't seem to be going well at the minute, and I'm worried.
You know, it's funny. Like, I actually read a few places that it was Big Sam that had been watching Tosun in the past, like in previous years.
I'm not sure. That's just something that the commentator came up with, and particularly with taking him off as he did, it kind of emphasised the point to me that I'm not sure if Sam, not if Sam actually wants him, but if Sam wants him to be the focal point of his team. I mean, and the way he spoke about him in press conferences as well, saying this lad clearly is the best striker that we can get for this price, and just the way he doesn't seem. I don't know if it's
I thought Sam's subs were more about damage control and keeping players from getting injured and that kind of thing, rather than trying to take the game back.
I think Balassi needed to be taken off, because
he was bad Saturday.
He was. It's just where, you know, I can't sugarcoat it.
I don't think he's ever been that good since he's come, to be honest. People keep making excuses about his injury, and by the way, that is a terrible injury, and it does take a while to get back up to speed. But the Balassi we're seeing now was the Balassi I remember before his injury as well. Yeah. It's not product, and it's always the step overs with no kind of progression in the move. I know we're not going to start going too negative, so I'm not going to dwell on that. But just as a pointer, I think what we're seeing now is probably what we'll get, and maybe two or three times a year he'll give us a fantastic performance.
I don't think he's got the same explosiveness that he had before his injury. That's what I'm not seeing. He used to be able to just tap the ball sideways and beat a man just with pure power and speed. And I don't see as much of that. He has done it. To be fair, since he's been back, he has done that a time or two.
He beat a few men against United, but I just, particularly from watching that Tottenham game, his whole game seems to be a gamble. He gambles on beating the man, then he gambles on throwing the cross in. And it's 9 times out of 10, it's a proper loose cannon of a cross that doesn't
He doesn't
anyone.
Get his head up. He never gets his head up for him.
This is something that, you know, it needs flagging. That, again, it might just be, this might sound like I'm making an excuse for his injury. It might be his injury not performing. I did have my doubts when we brought him in, but I don't want to dwell on that. I don't want to be negative, because I still do feel like he could be good if he produces the form that we've seen him produce for Palace, etc. But I'd rather see Vlasic in that position, because we've seen how direct Vlasic is. Vlasic doesn't beat a man and then hope on swinging the cross in. Vlasic will make sure that there's a man on the receiving end of whatever ball he plays next. He just seems to be a much more intelligent footballer. So,
yeah,
I feel like we are phasing him as a start. I know.
I hesitate to judge anyone on that one performance. You know what I mean? Because it seemed like anybody in offense, anybody in the attack, seemed like they were by themselves. But Lassie, I say every time he got the ball on the wing, you didn't see anybody in the frame with him that he could maybe do like a short combination with. It was always him trying to think about going past somebody and then eventually doing a really hesitant, you know, take on move and losing the ball. The other team gets it and they're going the other way. But it is the kind of thing we've seen before. So I have less belief in Bolasie than I had before. Again, though, that game, that I hope that's not indicative of our players. I hope not, because that second half was shit. There's no better way. If we just did a reaction video, people, you literally would have just had Max, David, and myself say, shit, 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 and it would have been like a 30-second video, and that's it. All right? Because that's all we really wanted to do. Just say it. And it's turned into this epic piece. So, and we did want to make sure that we said that Cenk Tosun looked good. There are people out there slating him, saying he didn't look that great. I thought he looked impressive for the situation, certainly.
Yeah.
You know? Somebody who can help us, for sure. And apologies to the Turkish fans who watched that on Saturday. Not every game looks like that. Lately, they have. But not every game does. All right. So anyway, guys, I think we've yammered about this long enough. So that's the end of our Spurs reaction, sort of a reaction. More of a manifesto about what we want to happen. We need to put this out there. Last Friday, we released a video talking about Klaassen's agent, who had said he's willing to fight for his place. The club hasn't talked to him about wanting to move him on or anything, and Klaassen is ready to go. And we complimented him and said, wow, that's the kind of guy we want on the team, somebody who's willing to fight for his place. And then, literally, a couple hours later, Big Sam was quoted as saying that, you know what, they haven't really played that well, so, you know, I think I'm okay with them leaving. That's paraphrasing. But basically saying that if the right offer comes in, he's fine with selling them. And that's just typical. You know, we release a piece of news and then it gets refuted right after that. So guys, quick knee-jerk reactions to this. I got a few questions to kind of guide conversation. But quick knee-jerk reactions. Max.
David Klaassen, 24, and I think Sandro's 22. We don't write them off. And something that hasn't been highlighted is that, and something that, you know, because after that shit show at Wembley, you know, I'm thinking of alternatives to, in terms of team selections and formation. So I'm just throwing caution to the wind, saying, fuck it, play them. And so the match fitness hasn't been flagged of any concern. You know, no one's came out and said, oh, they're lacking match sharpness, they're not fit. It just seems to be that Sam believed that they just don't fit in and don't play the way he'd wish they'd play in his side. I'd be very reluctant to let go of either of them, because they've showed promise as to what players they could be, and as I've said, they're still only young, so there's still potential there.
David.
Yeah, I just feel really uneasy with Allardyce, who, let's be frank, is a glorified interim manager, isn't he? He's not going to be here long term, and he's happy to sell kind of these prospects of potentially fantastic players, and he's just going to let them go. And I'm really uneasy about it, because it is being really tough to see them struggling because we were really excited about both of them. But you don't just write someone off in January when they only come in the summer. So if you let them go, especially on the cheap as well, I'd be furious. Because I'd like to think they outlast him at Everton Football Club.
I agree with both you guys. I don't want them to go. I think there's some potential there. And when you haven't actually, when you buy people, not just because they're solid players, but also based on their age and the fact that they have potential, and you don't give them the time to do anything with that potential, that just sucks. And it defeats the purpose of purchasing them in the first place. Mm-hmm. Our knee-jerk reactions sound like they're all the same. But guys, a few questions that are kind of that was devil's advocate, kind of grabbing my brain. Are we in a position right now to be able to give them more time on the field? Like that's the first question. Follow up question: who would they play over, and in what positions?
I think yes, because we're not going to go down. Well, I don't know. Saturday after Saturday, anything could happen. But realistically, we're not going to go down. But we're not playing for anything this year. Once again, our season's over. So now is a perfect time to play them. Regular first team football at Premier League level. And let's see what they're like after a real good run in the side. So I play them, definitely.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything they just said there. In terms of who to take out in the place, as we kind of talked about before, in this Everton midfield, it seems to be Gay and blank space.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, I'd put Klaassen next to Gay. And Sandro, I mean, we see at Barcelona, he seemed quite versatile, as in he can play on the wing. And I know he kind of was outed more as the out-and-out striker at Malaga. But this thing that all seemed to tie in with my long-term ambition of hoping that we actually do change the formation and do start playing some more fluid football. I want to see Tosin play, and I want to see Tosin get goals and prove that he is the level of the player that we hope him to be. I'm playing Sandro out wide if needs be, because he has got the odd goal. I mean, I know he scored against Atlanta. And I'm sure he grabbed another goal as well. Sevilla in pre-season.
Yeah.
Jesus, I mean, I know we're rolling back the clock saying he has got goals, but, they were good finishes, both of them. So, yeah, and as David said, the season's dead, so play them.
So, so basically we know we've got a back four. So if we run a 4-4-1-1 the way David was describing earlier, all right, you got that back four. You got Ghana and Klaassen in the center as mids. Sandro on the right. And then insert player here, Walcott. Okay? Walcott on the other side, maybe. Or Lookman. Or Vlasic. Or any of these actual wingers. All right? And then in that spot behind the striker, Sigurdsson and then Cenk Tosun. All right, that's what you're basically saying. I mean, it's not a bad idea. I was actually struggling with who to take out, because I think that's the big problem right now. I think Sam right now is not thinking, I want to develop this team for next season. Sam is thinking, I want to make this team better right now so I make sure I have a job next season. And that's where his big struggle is. That's why I think we're not seeing more youth played to develop. He's wanting somebody who can give results now.
Yeah.
And that's a problem for an Everton fan base who wants, who knows next year is going to have to be better than this year.
Sutton as well, particularly. That is a very interesting perspective. I know in the last time we recorded, I talked about the AGM quite heavily. Robert Elston, what he said was, because I think Everton are well known for the low ticket prices. We're always good for season ticket freezers, because the income is so low off ticketing. He said, the league position and where you finish in the league, you do get reward money, mm-hmm. and that is becoming imperative, particularly because we don't get much revenue off ticket sales. Where we finish in the league is becoming increasingly important.
Definitely.
So,
yeah. That's totally true. Because, I mean, the TV money, the difference between 10th place and 15th place is a lot of, it's millions.
So we need to be progressive,
you know,
in that sense.
It's tough. It's tough because, you know, the idea, we want results, but at the same time, we want an eye on the future. It's tough to figure out how to get both.
My only issue is that if you've just been spanked 4-0, I don't think any position on the pitch should be really secure. So I think any player in that side should be able to be chopped.
After watching who played, David, and watching those performances, I think you could rationalize taking out 8 of the 11, at least.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think that's where we're at as a squad at the moment. I don't think anybody should really, except maybe the goalkeeper, I don't think anybody's a starter at the moment.
I'd say
every shot for grabs, anyway.
Yeah, I'd say Tosin and Pickford, and you can maybe make an argument for Holgate, and some people could make an argument for Gay. And maybe Sigurdsson, you know? Okay. All of them. All 11, David.
Just leave it at the goalkeeper and toasting you. They were brilliant there.
And then him. And then him. And then him. And I don't have enough fingers. Shit. All right. So yeah. But it's a weird question. I don't think it's as easy a question as can be fit into like a short little tweet. Put this person in, put this person in, and all will be well. I just don't think – I think it's more complex – than that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what I would like to see is tweaking formation and tweaking personnel, just doing anything to show that he's working toward getting results. But I'll tell you guys, West Brom, I think we're going to see a really stale performance, and I think he's going to put in a very defensive squad.
Oh God, I hope not.
I could see it.
So they'll be on a bit of a high as well. So yep. It's going to be a tough game.
Particularly, again, you know, referring to that last game that we had against them, the fact that even then we set up defensively and, you know, just took what they threw at us. It doesn't bode well for this fixture on Saturday.
Nope.
And I'd say it needs a real attitude rethink because we need to put in a good performance, particularly after that 4-0 spanking.
So, guys, last question. And this, I think we've already answered this, but just to be clear. So the type of Everton you want to see, the type of Everton you want to support is an Everton that plays and gives players a chance before getting rid of them, sometimes maybe at the expense of results in a possibly finished season.
Well, yeah, but if the results were actually there to be lost, if you understand. So it's not as if
I'm talking about potential, David, that's all.
yeah, correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I agree. It's weird though to ask Sam to do that. You know what I mean? Like possibly put your job at risk.
See, this is where the whole Sam, that this is where
No, you're right. You're definitely right.
Raises his head. And I hate to say it, but I don't know if the board knew that something like this had happened, which I could see happening, particularly with Allardyce coming in. He's just that type of manager where conflict does arrive and come out of the place. So
question though. I feel like this is everybody though. If you take a new job, you want to make sure you can try to keep the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So if you're Sam, you're still going to want... It's weird, because if you're Sam, you want a better team for next year, but you don't know if you're going to actually have a next year, so you figure out how to get decent results before then. I don't know. I don't know the answer to this. I know the team that I want to support is one that would play the kids and not sit there and get rid of a player that hasn't had a shot. Some people would say they've had a shot. I disagree.
Especially with potential as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm angry if we get rid of these players. I'll just say.
Yeah.
And that is it for our Big Sam on Klaassen and Sandro segment. They might be gone soon. Tear. Everton have been linked with Theo Walcott for a while now, and today there have been supposedly he's been at Finch Farm today, and this is going to be announced soon, assuming everything goes well. Initial reactions, guys, keep them short because I got a few questions that you may seep into if we talk too long on it. But David, you want to start? Give me your initial first reaction.
I've come around to the idea. I think you guys both remember I wasn't particularly overwhelmed by it. I was getting linked with Walcott, but I think beggars can't be choosers, and at the moment we're not playing well, so the more options the better. Just as long as we use them correctly. I'm not 100% sure what his best position is these days, but he gives us options, so I'm on board with this one. I've come around to it. Another option out there for us when we're not playing well.
As I said from the off, really, I do feel like he'd be a good addition to the side. He just gives us a variation and a depth, which it's becoming more painfully obvious that our replacements for each position just aren't at the level that we need them to be, because we just look really subpar at the moment. And as David said, I think our biggest dilemma now is figuring out where we're going to play him. Mm-hmm. I put a tweet out earlier, and I think he made it very obvious during his time at Arsenal that he wants to be played as a striker and as a number nine. But it's also clear that he's not a 90-minute player. So I just feel like it's something that Everton needs to manage carefully. And don't get me wrong, I do feel like if we manage him correctly and use him in the right positions and give him the right amount of game time, I do feel like he can be a big part of the side, because he seems like he's got a kind of killer instinct about him. I think it's, what is it, over 100 goals and 400 appearances, which, bodes well.
Yeah, 19 goals last season. Always throws you off when the fan base of the club from which you're purchasing a player seems very ready to get rid of them. The Arsenal supporters seem very happy to move him on. A lot of people feel like this signing lacks ambition, because they feel like, would Spurs be buying Walcott? Would these other top six clubs be buying Walcott? That's the argument against it. And then the other argument is that
they looked at the league table recently.
You know what I mean? So the other argument that I've heard is that Arsenal plays better football, and so he's going to get fewer opportunities with Everton, like opportunities near the goal. I've heard the arguments against him. I get what they're saying. I think he's a bargain. I think 20 million is cheap these days. That's with the crazy ass market. If you'd have told me 20 million 3 years ago, holy shit, right? That's a layout for a player. But now 20 million is the new 7 million. It's a way smaller risk for a player who's already played in the Premier League and had 19 goals last season, the question is, my simple question is, does he make us better? And I think he makes us a stronger team, and therefore the 20 million pound layout is worth it. Do you guys feel like he makes us better?
I mean, don't forget, with that 20 million layout as well, we've got 15 of that from Barkley, so we basically paid 5 million for him. So whatever makes us feel better about the Barkley's transfer. No, I do. As I said, I know I was the most critical about this one, and it's not a case of me kind of switching sides. I think on the whole, he does make us a better team, and basically anything to keep Morelos out. That Everton squad will do me, to be honest.
Yeah, I feel like he makes us better. Again, the position dilemma kind of comes into play, but something that always springs to mind whenever I think of Theo Walcott, that goal he scored against Newcastle a few years back.
That looks so good.
he gets the ball on the like on the touchline and he just weaves as well. I think he loses the ball about three times, but he wins it back. And then
he loses his legs and everything, doesn't he? But he just
it points to the attitude of a player, just the attitude of a player with the squad lacks at the minute. You know, a real forward thinking, get in and around areas where you can hurt the opposition. So, yeah, just depending on how we use them.
Just let me nip something in the bud now, because I can already see these comments rolling in. I know Morelos has left, but he's only on loan. Don't forget, I'm just saying, I don't want it, the door to be open for him to ever come back in the summer. That would, because I could just see it now, someone saying, he left 2 weeks ago, you dickhead, and all that. I know he has, but I just don't want him to come back.
Yeah, and to David's point earlier as well, since Barkley was $15 million and we got a £4 million loan fee for Morales. So really, Walcott's just like $1 million. He's free. Really, he's free. Walcott is free. All right, let's just see him like
Evertonian
that.
Evertonian's logic.
Net spend, everybody.
Net spend, what is?
So you guys, we're starting to get into it. We need to get into it now. How do we use him? Because with Arsenal, he played on the wing often, and he's got pace, so clearly we can either play him somewhere up front and central, or we can play him on the wing. There were rumors, I don't know if these were bullshit or not, that Allardyce was thinking of giving him a shot at playing striker and playing more central. Allardyce came out and said, no, I didn't promise that, but you know, I think he does. The rumor I've heard is that Walcott does want more opportunities to play central and to play up front. So, again, we're buying another player where we have to figure out where we're going to put him. Where's the best place? Considering who we have, how do we line this guy up, and then how do we line up?
Go on, David.
Jenny, you need to start pointing the
finger. Hello, you need to start picking out. I was just like waiting for him to go.
I think right now, I don't think it's a black or white answer. I think we could do with another versatile player. I think traditionally for me, he's got to be starting as a winger. But certainly, if we need a different option up front, maybe if Tosin isn't working, then put him up there and see if he can kind of impact the game from that position. And then, obviously, if he is impacting the game from that position, then you can start playing him there more. But as I said, right now, I don't think we need a black and white answer. Maybe start him on the wing, but certainly open the door for him to play up front as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. In a sense, in terms of who would you take out in his place, I think going off like recently, he kind of just fits in where Bolasie would go. Really, you know, play him right wing. But again, if he's pushing the agenda that he wants to play central and he wants to prove his worth as a forward, he's got a reputation of a player that doesn't see out 90 minutes or a player that you bring on. So as you said, if Tosin isn't working during a game or he scored a hat-trick and he's lagging a little bit, take him off and bring Walcott on, you know what I mean?
I love that thinking.
I don't know. I think I was a little bit see you two laughing. I heard what you said. I like that one.
I think all the Turkish fans just went, yes, hat trick. That's right. Here's the thing. We always know we can put him on the wing. We know that. We always have that in our pocket. Always. That's good because he's got more pace than a lot of the other wingers that we have.
So I just want to add as well, again, I know it seems like I keep like referring to it, but in the long term, if we are hoping to kind of have this fluid attack and movement, then just putting them in a front three where they rotate, where they swap, where they chop and change, that'd be perfect for them, you know what I mean? So.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Unless that's Jerry's reaction there. It looked like he wanted to nip in the bud there and get in there.
I was about to give you all kinds of props and respect and be like, Max, you proposed this really great 4-3-3 formation earlier. Imagine Cenk Tosun, Walcott, DCL, or Lookman and then you can maybe throw Bolasie in there and whatever you put Vlasic wherever, because the guy can play several positions. regardless, that's dangerous. That is a dangerous combination of
It's exciting.
Yes.
It's an exciting combination. And what will last?
That's a bit too much of a strong word, I feel.
I will say exciting.
It's a potential work in progress. It's not quite exciting as of yet.
That's right. I forgot. Max is Mr. Cautious. Max hates being happy about something beforehand.
It really is exciting. It's, compared to what we're watching at the moment, just kind of seeing some sort of fluency going forward, and this kind of what you were talking about the depression and everything that goes with it. I think that would be brilliant. But, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself.
What we're talking about is a hypothetical, though. Yeah. We're probably not going to see that formation anytime soon, right? I think it would be exciting if we played those guys that way. I'm fine with saying that word, all right? Because I don't think it's going to happen next week. You know what I mean? Mm. That's exciting about personnel with potentially even a different manager. You know what I mean? And because we have to figure out a way to start giving Tosin service. He had nothing. He had nothing going on Saturday. And I think Walcott is somebody who can at least get the ball forward.
Something that you said, Jerry, is for all his lack of chances, his hold-up play was very good.
Mm-hmm.
So for that to be implemented with two other players that are willing to run off him and give him avenues to either go for the 1-2 or just play other people in, it bodes well.
Mm-hmm.
So
here's one for me. I know that we'll do a segment on this, so I'm going to keep it very short, maybe at the end of January. But if we complete this transfer, which we're going to, and get someone in at left back, I'd actually say we've had quite a good window so far this January with Tosin, Walcott, and potentially defensive cover as well. I think, you know, we are in the long term, we are kind of still building a decent squad. I don't feel like, despite being so shit this year, I still feel like we're not ever going to be that level, but the way Manchester City kind of transitioned over those few years and just got gradually better players, it does still feel like we're still trying to do that. And even though we've had such a torrid season, it seems like we're still on that pathway, which is a good sign. Like, players still seem to want to come to us.
Yeah.
Like, Walcott could have went to Southampton, couldn't he? But
And Bournemouth as well.
Yeah, I didn't hear Bournemouth was a possibility.
I mean, the higher wages probably played a factor, but that's something that we've got in our chest, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, Big Sam's been a fan of Walcott for a while, apparently. Brought him into the national team fold. That short little jaunt for Sam.
When he became England's most successful manager of all time.
You hear a lot of negativity toward this. I think a big part of that is because he comes from a top six squad and he's been in England for so long. I think if you take a player from one of the top six, let's just say Bundesliga or in La Liga, all right, or Serie A, take a top six squad from one of those leagues and say, okay, we're going to take a player that got 19 goals for them last season, and he wants to transfer to us, all right? If you use that logic, and it doesn't matter the fact that he's 28, borderline 29, I think we'd be more excited about this transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big reason, is the fact that he's old hat. We've seen him. He's been around.
Yeah.
You know, he's
been about forever, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I think he was brought into that World Cup in 2006, just way too early.
He was 16, wasn't he? Mm. Like, that's so early, that.
Jesus.
Oh, he's just one of those players that seems like he's been about forever. But
just think, Max, you would have went to the World Cup 2 years ago. At his age, like, how mad? Could you imagine doing that now? Like, I could never imagine at 16 going to a World Cup.
I know.
I mean,
obviously, Jerry, you would have got a boat over there because he did.
I'm just happy when Americans know what the World Cup is, because they sure as shit won't know this season. Sucks.
Bring them on.
I think the three of us are more positive than negative about this particular situation. I'm all for exciting offensive options. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So that's the end of the Walcott segment. Could be nice. Hope so. You know what? Let's do this. Let's not talk about football for a second. All right? What are you watching nowadays, guys? On Netflix, movies, TV? What are you guys watching right now? So, Max, we know you don't watch a lot of comedy shows, or at least David and I know. What are you watching right now, Max?
Currently, well, I've just about finished it now, but I went on a big binge of Black Mirror on Netflix. It takes the definition of mind-blowing to a completely different level.
I've watched that once, and it was the... I've watched two episodes of the first series, and one is where it's with the pig and the Prime Minister. And the other one is the where they're in that kind of... where they have to exercise to earn points, and then...
I didn't watch them in chronological order. I don't mean season wise either. I just picked a season and just picked a description that sounded interesting and just went from there. So I think my interest levels vary from other people because I've basically read a description and if I've liked it, I've gone for it. You know what I mean? I haven't gone down a list. I've just chopped and choose between which ones I watched, and you know.
I suppose it's not something that needs to be chronological, does it? Anyway, isn't it?
I think that's one of the main attractions of it. It's so absurd, and the fact it uses different actors as well. You know, it's a crazy. I wouldn't know how to describe it.
A mixed genre, maybe.
Well, used to make these kind of shows a lot back in the day. And I can say this because I'm from the land that time forgot. See, Twilight Zone, Outer Limits. Yes, Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Yes, you're actually describing exactly what I'm talking about. They did those kind of shows where it's like little hour-long scary movies. You know, Twilight Zone's a great example. Alfred Hitchcock, Outer Limits. They have those really, they were great. Tales from the Crypt. They used to do that on HBO. That was a color one, David, before you give me more shit. But yeah, I saw the Pig Prime Minister one. I thought it was great, but yeah, great is an interesting word. It's a well-made show and it's thought-provoking, it's fascinating. I don't need to see that one again.
To be honest, in terms of a narrative, I thought that episode was one of the poorer ones, to be honest.
Really?
There are a lot more interesting episodes if you go through them. And to be honest, for that to be the pilot of the show as well, I mean, how that got approved as a pilot, whoever watched that and give that the go-ahead... You know, must have an interesting thought process.
All right. Well, that is, okay, based on your recommendation, and there's 11 million people on Twitter saying, oh, new Black Mirror season, so good. So, I mean, basically everyone is shoving me in that direction. So when I finish the stuff I'm watching, I'm going to it. All right? I will. And then we can have productive conversations about Black Mirror instead of us just saying, oh, I saw the one with the pig. Oh, my God. So... that's what Max is watching right now. David, what do you got going on?
I'm a walking cliche of myself. I've literally just got back into Friends on Netflix. Bear in mind, I've watched every episode over and over again all my childhood. You know, Comedy Central, it's on every day, but now it's on Netflix, just starting from episode one, and just every single episode, I'm in my elements. I'm genuinely, I've never been happier. even now, I'm just thinking, thank God we're not talking about Everton. We just talk about Friends instead. I think we should change the podcast to the Friends podcast. I feel like we could suck them in there.
Have I got to out this on air now, officially? Have I got to
go and do it? Yeah, I hope you get some abuse for this in the comments as well.
I've never watched Friends, and I just don't. It just doesn't look like my cup of tea, and I just don't fancy dedicating me time to it.
Well, it might not be, you know what I mean? But I will say, the only way you can find out if it's definitely not your cup of tea is to try it.
Watching it. Yeah. I've seen the odd snippet, and few, you know, it's just light-hearted laughter in it, really.
That's what I live for, mate. None of this, seediness, just easygoing nighttime watch before bed. That's me all over. Even right now, as we record in the other room, I've got the episode lined up to be ready to be played when we're done.
Nice. So stabbing lectures. Yeah, I had the girl I dated before my wife owned every episode, like on DVD. This is before Netflix was a thing, before instant viewing was a thing. That's how long I've been with my wife, long time. But she owned like all of them. And it was the only thing that she liked that I liked. Okay? Because we're talking about somebody who watches like American Idol and... all the shit that I despise was her favorite. Yeah. So it's a miracle that that relationship lasted as long as it did. A miracle? No, that's not the right
word. A relationship built on friends.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? It was like the only thing that I could tolerate that didn't... That's so terrible to say. No, I feel fine with it.
I hope you watch this show, you know.
Oh, God. You know what? We're talking about somebody who refused to watch films with subtitles. Okay.
Oof.
She wouldn't do that.
Hey.
Yeah.
Oof. That's quite narrow-minded.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay. So, but back
it's
to
like
the
relationship counseling here.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing. We could literally fuddle that into it.
It's better than Everton. I'd rather go to Everton.
So, but yeah, Friends, I think a lot of people would say, is one of the best sitcoms that's been made. Period. It depends. Like, I think, Max, you were saying you're not a big sitcom guy, though. Like, the live studio audience, the canned laughter sometimes.
The laugh and track stuff and all that. Yeah. It's not for me.
See, I grew up with those, so there's some of them that I find to be brilliant. Some of them I find to be tolerable. Then there's others that they're awful. I can't. It's just, it feels so fake, and it feels like they're playing to the lowest common denominator. And if you're one of those people, I apologize.
If anybody here enjoys the Big Bang Theory, then do us a favor, just turn the video off and never come back again. I despise that show. That is the worst show. And because it's always on, you'll always think, I'm just going to stick with it this episode. It's an easy watch. Oh, it's painful. It's the worst program ever.
And not to be a dick to anybody else out there, but I totally agree with David. Yeah, totally side with him on this.
It's poor, isn't it? I've watched that, and I don't know how people get entertained by it. I don't know. I think I've just been exposed to the shitty sitcoms.
Yeah.
Before the actual good ones, it just might be me saying just putting them shutters down and just saying nah, it's not my thing.
You should try to start. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, needs a dose of Friends. Just like that, like a sandwich, mate.
Friends, Frasier, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Just Max in the middle, just lapping it up. Be fair, right? Over here, Jerry, on Channel 4 in the mornings, they used to do, like, Everybody Loves Raymond. Then it was, like, Friends, then Frasier.
They're all good.
You just put that on while you're getting changed, then you'd just be soaking it all up. That's maybe why.
There's a really good documentary about Everybody Loves Raymond. There's the guy who created it wants to export it and do a different version of it, like, you know, adapt it for Russian television, I believe. And so he has to go to Russia and, like, recast it and get the writers to understand the point of the stories that he's telling because it doesn't translate to their society. It's such a good documentary. I think it's called Exporting Raymond. Thing is what it's called. It's good. It's on Netflix. So yeah. But yeah, that's the thing, Max. What I would recommend is before you watch the ones with the laughter, with the live studio audience, watch the shows, the really good, like more modern sitcoms, like Arrested Development, The Office, either one of those is good, you know, either the American or the British. What was that?
The American one's better for me.
I normally prefer the British versions of shows, but that one is I do prefer the American that one.
I didn't watch the American for years because I was like, no, the British one's too good. And it's just going to be too, no offense, Jerry, but it's going to be too American humor, if you know what I mean.
I get it.
It was fantastic, and it's actually so much better, I think.
Actually, one of my favorite comedies that I've seen in the past like 10 years is British which is IT Crowd.
Oh, IT Crowd, yeah, yeah. See, there's loads there, Max.
I know, I've seen the odd episode. I don't know, I just... Because I think as something that you just brought up there, there's a stark contrast in American and British humour. And I think that can become a bit of a conflict depending on which one you pick to watch. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I think I've just shut that door and just saved myself all the drama of it, really. So,
are you going to be okay, Max? You seem like you've had an emotional breakthrough here.
you can call me narrow-minded.
I'm not saying that.
I like no,
if anything, you're more sophisticated, mate.
That's what it is. You're aware of your tastes. Mm-hmm. You know where you want to go with it. All right, so I'm watching two shows right now. I'm watching some shows with my wife. I don't know, Breaking Bad, which is great. And what else? Narcos, which is a Netflix show.
What season of Narcos?
Second season. We're getting toward the end of the second season, and I don't want to end it because I know what happens at the end of the second season of Narcos, and I'm not ready.
That's when Pablo.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen because that guy that plays Pablo is so good.
Yeah, I've watched up until Pablo dies, and
I know.
No shit. But, I know. I just they go on to the Cali cartel next, I think, and I don't know. Without Pablo, it just feels lost.
Yeah, so, because that actor's just a badass. He's great. He's the best part of the show. So, watching those with my wife. And by myself, I'm watching, there's a show, it's like a German version of Stranger Things called Dark that's on Netflix.
Cool.
It is very German. And it basically imagine Stranger Things, except there's not really, I haven't seen like a monster of any kind yet. And it involves more like time and time travel and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So it gets a bit Donnie Darko.
It involves like timelines and that kind of thing. Like, yeah, I hesitate to tip too much because I don't want to screw it up for you or for anybody else. But it's a good show. It's a good hour-long show. Yeah, it's solid. And I'm also watching Ash versus Evil Dead because I like, and it's on Netflix. If you've ever seen the Evil Dead movies, it's like a horror movie mixed with a comedy. Very gory and hilarious. Just the gore is really funny. All right? It's like slapsticky gore. All right? I mean, like, there's a point where a car attacks a person and grinds their face off with his tire. All right? It's really funny, but gross. Hey. But it's funny. It's on Netflix. Instant viewing. It's a Starz original, I think. That's the same network has the Neil Gaiman series. American Gods is on that channel, I think. Which I haven't seen that, but I read the book.
I've heard that's very gory as well.
Yeah, the book is awesome. All right, so this is some recommendations for all you people out there. That's what we're watching. Maybe you have other stuff you want us to watch. Tell us. That'd be the shit. Now's the time when we like to hearken back to yesteryear at a time where we weren't so shit. Sorry. I'm trying to get the negative Nigels out, but they keep coming back. So we hearken back to yesteryear and remember a player who, made us happy inside. All right. So this guy formed a formidable partnership with Leighton Baines along the left side. Just was really fun to watch their combination play going forward. Unpredictable, silky skills, just some of the best foot skills that I've seen. What a fun player to watch, and what a nice guy. He had 7 goals the first time around for Everton. He had 11 goals the second time around. That was when he was on loan and after we had purchased him. Then we got him off to Sunderland, and he's recently been released by Sunderland. And now he plays for Bidvest Wits. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, in South Africa. Of course, I'm talking about Steven Pienaar. How we miss you.
Pienaar, Steven Pienaar.
What a player. What a player.
So guys, how would you describe Steven Pienaar's play to someone who's never seen him? Max.
Unbelievable footwork, for one. His vision, particularly as you mentioned, where Leighton Baines was obscene. I think his partnership, I wouldn't be far wrong when I'm saying at that time, it was one of the best winger and fullback partnerships in Europe. Silky, smoothy, you know, he knew where to put the ball, where to run. He knew how to dink a ball as well, if we know what goal I'm on about there. But yeah, just an absolutely phenomenal footballer. I don't think I've seen many better footballers for Everton in my time.
I feel like a fraud. I didn't love him as much as everybody else did. But I don't know, I was very bitter when he left to go to Tottenham. Yeah. Because Tottenham were not the Tottenham that they are now. They were still a very good side. I think they qualified for the Champions League as well. But they just weren't at the level that they are now, whereas Everton were right on there.
Yeah, we were the competition, weren't we? Really?
Yeah, they were like rivals, and felt like they kind of maybe just had that London location on their side that sucked them in. And it left a real bitter taste in my mouth, that move. But yeah, on his day, he was fantastic. He was very technical and, you know, low centre of gravity, and him and Baines were fantastic. And yeah, he was around that era. He was one of the really good players that we had, and he did give us some good memories. I don't think he'd done too great when he come back, though, sadly. But that first spell, yeah, he was great.
So David thought Pienaar just sucked. Clearly, all right. Now that's interesting because I remember like when I first started supporting Everton. And I didn't realize that he had been sold. You know, it took me like about halfway through the year, my first year supporting them, to realize that he had returned, that he had come back. But it was really quick when I saw the partnership with Baines. It was fast. You could tell immediately that there was something special going on there. If you were to compare Pienaar to another current Premier League player, who would you compare him to? Who would you liken him to?
I couldn't think of it, and I think maybe Max, you might come up with a better one. I thought the original question might have been an Everton player.
Well, I was going to get there next, actually.
Oh, okay. I'll go with that. It's a little bit easier. He kind of is a Vlasic type player, I think, where he's a bit more skillful on the ball, but they're small and they can move quite well, and yeah, but I think Pienaar is a lot more technically gifted, but he's probably the best comparison in terms of the Everton squad I can think of.
Right, because that took quite a bit of thinking for me to try and, you know, bring someone out. Take the pace out of Eden Hazard's game.
Take the pace out of Hazard's game.
And, you know, as Sutton, it's one of the fondest football memories I've got, his return, his debut against Chelsea. Obviously, he scored quite early on, but there was a piece of footwork that he did. I think Jose Boswinger closed him down. It was right in front of me and where I was sitting. The man literally threw in a few step overs, but the way he manipulated the ball, you know, he was, you know, he had studs on the ball, so the ball was underneath his feet. The way the man manipulated the football was just a joy to watch. So yeah, if it was, you know, it's quite outrageous to compare him, you know, like for like. But take the pace out of Eden Hazard's game, and probably that's what you've probably got with Pienaar.
See, I was hesitant to say Eden Hazard. David was hesitant to say it, and you said it. I think the fact that all three of us, that player popped into our brain, I think there's some validity to it, because I don't think we're all idiots. All right? I think we each have our moments.
Yeah, that's true. I think two players without saying that he's as good as, because he's obviously never as good as what Hazard is, but he's just got the same kind of
flair and technique.
Flair's the word, yeah.
See, I was going to say Hazard and Lanzini from West Ham. You know, he's got that same slight build. Both of them are pretty good on the ball. I don't think he's not as strong on the ball as Hazard is. Hazard's got more bulk. That's the thing. You knock Hazard over, he's probably not going to fall over. You literally have to take his legs. Pienaar, he was more slight. You know, it wouldn't take as much, but he would also draw a decent amount of fouls just outside the box. Kept that ball close, really close. So I think it's a genuinely solid comparison. But no, we don't think they're the same quality player. But they have the same qualities. Okay, that's where we'll go with that.
It's funny. It's although I appreciated them at the time, it's only now maybe 8-9 years on where we've seen some decent Everton sides, but we've seen some naff as well. And that particular generation of around those 5 years from say 2005, 2006 to 2010, 2011, you know, Pienaar, Arteta's, Cahill's, you know, that was a great team. That was such an enjoyable team to watch, and there were so many great characters in there really fall in love with. And
I was going to say that we've talked about it, met plenty of, you know, how we related to them players as well as a team. And you know, they were just a real joy to watch, and you just felt like you were there with them. Do you know what I mean? There wasn't so much of a disconnect as there is now.
We were like top five. You know, battling with Villa for top five every year, and there's not this top six bullshit that there is now. This is what makes me laugh about the top six argument when people talk about the breakaway league. The top six, as the current format that they are now, have finished in the top six twice in the Premier League era, the whole time. There's no such thing as the top six. It's just a cycle of different teams doing well, and that's why I'm so fed up of hearing about the top six, because In that time, you know, we were fifth every year, you know, back top five, top six, pushing for the Champions League. So, it was a great period, and Pienaar was a part of that team.
So, favorite Pienaar moment?
Yeah, one stands out for me.
I've got a feeling I know what you're gonna say. But
do you want me, mine's an obvious one if you want me to do mine first.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, mine is without doubt the goal at the end.
The Emirates,
yeah. I know mine's it's probably the most obvious one, but it was just an unbelievable finish, and a game we should have won, really, but we ended up scoring. But just the celebration as well was just fantastic. That was a great goal, man. That's one.
If I'm not wrong, that was Landon Donovan's first game as well, wasn't it?
It could have been, potentially, yeah. I can't remember. I thought that a debut was at Goodison, but I could be wrong. Jerry, this is where you should chip in.
I'm sure it was his first game, because I remember him always saying about it, like his debut was in the snow.
Yes, I actually, this is the shitty thing. I never got to see Landon Donovan play for Everton.
He was fantastic as well.
He just signed for a Mexican team, León. Yeah, he came out of retirement. Are you kidding? That's crazy.
While you're doing your stories, I'll see if that was his debut.
Yeah. My favourite Pienaar memory, as I alluded to earlier, is just that return, that game against Chelsea, with 2-0, the 2-0 or 2-1. 2-0, I'm sure it was. But I just remember he scored really early on. And just the crowd went mad, and his celebration, you know, you can always tell a lot by a player's celebration, and it's just he was just elated to have scored that goal. And as I say, that another like a memory that comes from his return there was that just this magical piece of footwork. I'm sure it's on YouTube. If you just bang in Steven Pienaar against Jose Boswinger. Just how he manipulated the ball and how he played that game, really. It was just brilliant.
Last
question. Can you imagine any current Everton player striking up a Baines-Pienaar type partnership? And who would they be if you can?
No, I can't. I can't, because, you know, even if Baines does come back into the side, he hasn't got the legs that he did when Pienaar was playing. Plus, I've always felt like, you know, on his side. I mean, over the past few years, it's been Morales that's been on the same side as him, and something that I've picked up on is, whereas Baines has always been one to try and, you know, be productive and, you know, nice interplay, 1-2 touch football, Morales always seemed to be the one, you know, he'd pick up the ball and he'd just take off down the wing with the ball, and Baines would just be there like, yeah, you know, fucking hell, mate. You know what just I mean?
Like,
yeah, you know, literally, it's what he'd do. And I can't really see it happening down the other side with Balassi. Balassi is going to be the one that we're playing, so no, I can't. And it's sad, really.
Yeah, I think it was one of a kind. I think the problem now is, even if you could get someone to replicate the role of Pienaar, I don't think Baines is ever going to be the same player now, so it looks that ship's probably sailed.
I agree. I think the only player that I think comes anywhere close to Pienaar's control, the fact that he can manipulate the ball the way we talked about, I feel like Lookman has that kind of ability with the ball. He's also a smaller guy. He also likes to kind of cut in, you know? But I don't really see a whole lot of, like, I'm trying to think of these players that we have being intelligent combination players.
Yeah, it's being, with Pienaar, I've drawn the comparison to Lookman there, it's being intelligent, but it's being very selfless as well, because Pienaar was a very selfless player. You know, he'd managed to cut the ball back and find people in space. And
you don't remember him ever just firing one on goal, do you? And flying over the bar when he had a pass or something like that.
No, I know. So, yeah, I can see the comparisons with Lookman, but obviously I think when he was at Charlton as well, I mean, he played striker, so I think there's a bit more of a selfishness. That's not to say it's wrong, because, you know, you do need to be selfish if you're an attacking player at times, but yeah, I don't know. I just don't know if we'll have a combination or a footballer like him again.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, the people, like I said, Lookman is more of a foot skills, you know what I mean, similarities. But I haven't really seen a whole lot of that, you know, having the vision that Pienaar had, the combination play that Pienaar had. It's the combination of the being able to keep the ball so close, like it's Velcro to your foot, and at the same time being able to have that kind of vision coming from the wing rather than a 10. You know, we don't have a whole lot of that right now. So that's something that just shows how special that was.
Yeah, a lot of our attack and play, you know, particularly over the last 10 years, really, it's been from the fullbacks bombing on and creating things from there, and you just don't see that in our team now, do you? So, particularly at left back, I think investment's needed, because I think you see with the likes of Manchester City how vital having fullbacks that operate in an attacking sense can be involved to your team. So, you know, as you say, there's just a lot of rebuilding to be doing.
I think it's a mindset thing too. I don't think right now we're set up to have those fullbacks bombing forward. I think Kenny could do it. I do. I think he's stronger offensively than he's given the opportunity to show in these games so far. You watch him playing during the World Cup this summer, how many times did he attack, combined with Kieran Dowell up the side, and throw a sweet cross in? I mean, he is an attacking player. He can do it. He just hasn't been. We're not set up like that right now.
We're just fragile at the minute.
So defensive, you know. So hopefully we can. It may be a mindset thing. Shit, that negative mindset thing coming back. Ugh. Anyway, this is supposed to be about Pienaar, not about how shit we feel about our team. I guess that's what it is. We're lamenting the fact that he was really good and we could really use a player like him right now.
Yeah, lovable person as well. I've met him a few times and he's, you know, he's a top lad.
Well, of course you have.
Do you know what? Something that I never expected from Stephen Pienaar the first time I met. I never expected his voice to be so deep.
Yeah, it's a strange voice, isn't it?
You hear him speak and you wouldn't put the voice to the man, you know what I mean?
I feel like you could swap Tim Howard's and Stephen Pienaar's voice. Tim Howard, I expected, and he's just, you know, just sounds like a normal guy. Stephen Pienaar's got this deep base. You know, you could swap those guys. It's always weirded me out about Tim Howard. Same thing, you know, because I expected like this. Hey, how's it going? You know, but it just was not it at all. Once again, Max holds the fact that he gets to meet, and David too. Just like, hey, Jerry, look, we meet footballers. It's awesome. And I'm just like, yeah, I've met my friends. That's it.
They're only people, Jerry. They're only people.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
They're
more than that. So let's see here. So anything else on Steven Pienaar?
Very good player and a great ambassador for the club.
I'm glad he's getting to finish up playing in South Africa. I think it's always nice when you can go back to your home country and still get some positive football memories where it began. So, okay, well, that's it for our Steven Pienaar Remember Me segment. And that's it for the big show, the podcast. If you've been listening to the podcast, we appreciate it. Thanks. Why don't you subscribe to the podcast, the Toffee Blues podcast, and rate it if you can. Also, on YouTube, if you're digging the videos, please subscribe. We're over 400, and that's your fault. Thank you. Like, comment, all that stuff. Check out these guys' articles on the Toffee Blues website. Check out the Toffee Blues website. Just do it in general, just because there's some good stuff on there. Check out the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Yeah, and I think that's all of my plugging that needs to happen. All right, gentlemen, thanks so much for your time, and I guess I'll talk to you later on. We got to give a West Brom preview later on this week, so yeah, we'll have to more shows to come.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, all right, guys, take care, everybody.
Take it easy.
All right, bye bye.